Greetings and welcome to Word Magazine number 182. This is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. Today is Saturday, December the 5th of 2020. It's been about a month since the last Word Magazine that I recorded and posted. I think it was the very last day of October. And so a whole month has gone by, no Word Magazines in the month of November. There were a lot of things going on. It was right before the election. I was doing some volunteering here locally in the election. And then there was sort of the aftermath of that, and my family did some traveling. And the Thanksgiving holiday came, and I had some grading that I had to take care of for the classes that I'm teaching. So I'm trying to get a little bit caught up. I had an initial goal of wanting to average one podcast per week. I'm falling short of that, but I'm hoping here in the last few weeks of this year that I might be able to record several Word Magazine podcasts. You can look for those. Hopefully those will be upcoming. I'm doing this one in a video format that'll be posted to the YouTube channel for Word Magazine. Of course, it'll also be posted to sermonaudio.com in an audio format that'll be available on iTunes. So if you're listening to just the audio and you want to see the video, there's not going to be anything flashy about the video. It's just going to be me sort of being a talking head. You can go to Word Magazine on YouTube. If you're listening to the video and you'd rather just have the audio, you can, as always, go to sermonaudio.com, the page for Christ Reformed Baptist Church, and you can find it there. So in this episode of Word Magazine, what I would like to do is offer a review of a chapter in a book. And the chapter is one written by a scholar named John Barton. And the chapter is titled Marcion Revisited. And this episode is really going to be a follow-up to Word Magazine number 176, which was The New Perspective on Marcion. In that episode, I noted what I call the new perspective on Marcion, as it was reflected in Knust and Wasserman's book, To Cast the First Stone, from Princeton, 2019. Who was Marcion? Marcion was a sort of early arch heretic in early Christianity. He died around the year 160. He started a Gnostic movement. He disparaged the Old Testament. He mutilated the Gospel of Luke and added to it his own version of the Pauline epistles. He taught that the God of the Old Testament was an evil demiurge and had no connection to the God of the New Testament. And the two, in fact, were at odds with one another. So the old perspective on Marcion was basically what I just put forward. Marcion was a heretic. He mutilated the scriptures. Tertullian wrote a series of works against Marcion, and he called Marcion that Pontic mouse who gnawed away at the Gospels. As already mentioned, Marcion is said to have promoted a mutilated version of Gospel of Luke, his Euangelion, or his Gospel, and alongside of that, he had a mutilated version collection of the Pauline letters, where he tried to extract the parts that had a Jewish influence or had too much emphasis from his perspective on the Old Testament. And the old perspective suggested that Marcion had been influential in urging early Christians to go ahead and define, recognize their canon in order to counteract Marcion's truncated canon, drawing on the New Testament writings. But there has been emerging a new perspective on Marcion. And this new perspective on Marcion, which we talked about in Word Magazine 176, basically presents a rehabilitation of Marcion, that Marcion didn't so much do damage to the scriptures as he simply perhaps was preserving a primitive and legitimate form of the text of Luke or a legitimate and authentic, from at least some perspective, collection of Paul's letters. Some will even describe him as a conservative. He was conserving some early Christian traditions. And rather than taking exception with Marcion, some would even say that it was the Orthodox who mutilated the scriptures by expanding and adding to them things that were late and spurious. And we see this mindset in modern text critics who see the ending of Mark as a barnacle that needs to be scraped off the bottom of the boat of the New Testament, or the woman taking an adultery passage, John 7:53-8:11. Neust and Wasserman, in their book on To Cast a Stone, sort of reflected this. It was a chapter, and I reviewed that in Word Magazine 176. And within that chapter, they acknowledged their dependence on a German scholar, Ulrich Schmid, and a book that he published in 1995. The German title is Marcion und sein Apostolos. And the Apostolos was the name given to Marcion's Pauline letter collection. So his Evangelion and his Apostolon, or his Apostolos. So I've been interested in this new interpretation of Marcion. I'm probably going to try to write an article about it. And today I just want to sort of continue that quest. I was motivated to read this chapter, thinking I might do this podcast, this Word Magazine podcast on it. And so I want to look at an earlier effort to put forward this new perspective on Marcion. So it really predates Canoost and Wasserman, and was apparently probably put together right at the same time or just after Ulrich Schmid had completed his influential work on Marcion. So the article or chapter or paper that I want to look at, again, is one written by John Barton, but it appears in this book, this larger book that is titled The Canon Debate. And this was published by Hendrickson in 2002. It was edited by Lee Martin McDonald and James A. Sanders. And it's a treasure trove of articles on various issues related to canon, both related to the Old Testament canon, related to the New Testament canon, and there are several appendices also within it. So it's a really good book that sort of gives you the state of the art on modern canon studies circa 2000, or so it's published in 2002. And it's interesting to get a used book like this. I think I ordered this one online, but the previous owner put in here his name. I don't know if you can see this. It was previously owned by Marvin Tate, and I think this is the same Marvin Tate who was an Old Testament scholar that taught at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. I think, in fact, he was teaching there when I was a student at Southern, never had him for a class. But anyways, so this is the book that we're looking at, and we're looking in particular at an article within it. The article, again, written by John Barton. And Barton is an Anglican priest. He's still living. I think he was born in the late 1940s, a scholar who taught at Oxford. He's an academic specialist in the Old Testament, and in particular in the area of canon. He's written extensively books and articles about this. And so he is, again, the author of this article that we're going to be looking at, titled Marcion Revisited, which is chapter 20 in this larger book, The Canon Debate. I looked at the footnotes in the article, and there's no mention of Schmid or his work on Marcion. So it must have been written, the paper must have been written either contemporaneous when that book was coming out, and Barton simply didn't mention it. hadn't read it or studied it yet, or perhaps he had composed this before Schmidt had even done his work. I'm not sure. But even though he doesn't draw on Schmidt's work, this is essentially the same type of work as apparently Schmidt did with this reassessment of Marcion. And so this must have been sort of an impulse in the late 20th century to reinterpret Marcion, reinterpret the significance of Marcion, and to rehabilitate him and to give him this new perspective. I mean, the title, Marcion Revisited. That just, you know, conveys that very idea. So basically what I want to do in the rest of this Word magazine is that I just want to offer a review of the article, and I want to offer some responses to it. So we could begin with the introduction to the article, in which Barton begins by surveying what we could call the old perspective on Marcion. And he notes that the old perspective on Marcion, although he doesn't use that terminology, that basically Marcion was viewed in what he calls highly negative terms, that Marcion was viewed as a heretic. And he says that was the case for two reasons. First, because Marcion, according to the traditional sort of perspective on him, rejected the Old Testament. And secondly, because he reduced the New Testament to only one gospel and a handful of Paul's letters. So that's, doesn't use that terminology. He's saying that's the traditional view, scholarly view even, of Marcion. So with that introduction done, Barton then moves on to a section that he titles The Question of Marcion's Influence. And here he basically gives a brief survey of some of the modern scholarly views on the significance of Marcion. He begins by noting that Marcion's stance against the Old Testament has survived in several modern theologians. He mentions Rudolf Bultmann, and most especially Adolf von Harnack, the great church historian. And Barton describes Harnack, as a modern Marcionite. And he shares a well-known dictum of Harnack that was appeared in a book that he published on Marcion in 1921, the second edition in 1924. And Barton, of course, Harnack's original was in German, but Barton gives this translation of this anecdote statement from Harnack. He said, "To reject the Old Testament in the second century was a mistake, which the church rightly repudiated. To retain it in the 16th century was a fate which the Reformation could not yet avoid. But to continue to keep it as a canonical document after the 19th century is the consequence of religious and ecclesiastical paralysis." That's the end of the quote. So a very interesting statement from Harnack, saying that Marcion was wrong to reject the Old Testament in the second century, but at the Reformation, there were people who wanted to get rid of the Old Testament, maybe he was thinking of Luther, but fate would not mean that the Reformers could do that. But now he says, writing in the 19th century, if Christianity still holds on to the Old Testament as authoritative, it's just a matter of its own religious paralysis. So perhaps fittingly, Barton calls Harnack a modern-day Marcionite. He also notes that modern scholars began to see Marcion as a wrongly maligned figure who was actually creative and had a significant constructive role in influencing the formation of the New Testament canon. This is what I alluded to earlier. I think if you were to survey throughout from the late 19th century into the 20th century, most mainstream academic scholars, if you were to go back and look in textbooks, you would probably find a quote in many of them that would say something like, because of Marcion, the early Orthodox Christians were forced to define the canon. And they did it as a reaction to Marcion. He gives a quotation, Barton does, from a 20th century New Testament scholar, John Knox, not the Scottish reformer, but someone else with the same name, who wrote in 1942 a book on Marcion titled Marcion in the New Testament from the University of Chicago Press. And he said, quote, Marcion is primarily responsible for the idea of the New Testament, end quote. And that would be a very common, I think, sentiment from 20th century, mid-20th century scholars who would sort of see that. But the sort of new perspective on Marcion not only challenges Marcion as a heretic, as an innovator, but it challenges the idea that Marcion played a role in the formation of the New Testament canon. And Barton gives says there are two problems with that old consensus view. He says, first of all, Marcion was more interested in excluding books rather than in making his own collection. And so he's one of the things he's saying is Marcion wasn't really trying to create his own canon so that the Orthodox had to create a counter canon to that. Secondly, Barton says the problem with that is it doesn't seem that there was any significant stress on the New Testament canon from the mid-second century forward, the time of Marcion. There is no evidence that because of Marcion, we don't find church fathers, ecclesiastical writers of this period talking about, well, we've got to deal with the canon because of Marcion. So these are the conclusions that Barton offers in this introductory section on Marcion. He says, this is page 344 in the Canon Debate book in chapter 20, Marcion Revisited. He says, quote, thus, Marcion seems to have had far less influence on the development of the New Testament canon than he is still given credit for. End quote, page 344. And he follows that up with this statement, quote, the development of the New Testament followed its own logic, and Marcion did not influence it one way or the other, end quote, page 344. So there's a challenge here to that old consensus view. So, and you can still, I'm guessing if you were to listen to some seminary professors today lecturing, they might say something about Marcion served as a catalyst. You might hear some pastors who were trained in seminaries in the late 20th century and on into the early 21st century, they'll still be sort of repeating this mantra, but now you have the gnosis, and you know that Barton and others are challenging this consensus. Why then does Barton say that Marcion is important, even if he didn't serve as a catalyst for the development of the New Testament canon? And so this is really the meat of this chapter or article or paper. Barton suggests four reasons or four topics to extrapolate and explain why Marcion is significant. First, he says it's his attitude towards the Old Testament and the New Testament respectively that's important. Secondly, he says Marcion is important because he rejected allegorical interpretation of the Bible. Third, he says Marcion is important because of his introduction of what he calls a bipartite canon, that he had his gospel and he had his Pauline corpus, and so this was influential. Fourth, he says he's important because of a writing that he is attributed to him called his Antitheses. And this served as a companion to his reduced Bible. And so basically the rest of the article then covers those four points. What I want to do now is I'm going to look briefly at each one of these points, explain how Barton presents each of these topics, and then offer some responses to them. So first of all, he begins with Marcion's attitude towards the Bible. Barton begins by noting that Marcion's attitude was, quote, more conservative than radical, end quote, page 344. The language here emphasizes, and I saw this also in Knuth and Wasserman, that really Marcion was a conservative. He was a traditionalist and not an innovator, not a heretic. With respect to the Old Testament, Barton says that it wasn't that he simply rejected the Old Testament as a spurious or uninspired writing, but he says what's important is that Marcion believed that the Old Testament was a revelation. It was just an inspired revelation that came from an evil divinity, an evil God, the Demiurge. Then, with respect to the New Testament, Barton says that Marcion, his view of the New Testament was not that it was scriptural. He didn't have as high a view of the New Testament as he did of the Old Testament, which he saw as a revelation from an evil demiurge. But instead, he had a looser view of the New Testament. He saw it as a collection, this is using Barton's words, page 345, a collection of generally reliable historical documents, which needed editing to remove errors and slips. And Barton goes on to say that these attitudes of Marcion towards the New Testament were sort of a mirror image of the attitudes of most Christian writers in the second century. So his point is that although, yes, okay, Marcion rejected the Old Testament, that wasn't true of mainstream Orthodox Christians, but other than that, the way he viewed the New Testament was consistent with the way the early Christians, and particularly their writers, thought about the New Testament. So he says on page 345, the Christian writings were merely what he calls memory joggers. They were not independently existing scriptural oracles. And he says Christians, what was important for the early Christians was not the New Testament writings, it was the oral traditions that were handed down. The books were just memory joggers. He adds two arguments in favor of this conclusion on early Christian attitudes towards the New Testament. First of all, he says, early Christians, he says, used the codex, the book form, and he sees this as evidence that they didn't take the New Testament as seriously as they would an inspired fixed writing, even like the Old Testament, that he sees as coming from a revelation from evil demiurge. That because they use the codex, he calls it on page 346, an essentially informal method of recording information. Secondly, he cites David Parker, the renowned postmodern New Testament text critic from Birmingham, and he cites Barton's thesis that the early Christians had a flexible view of the New Testament text. It's not the text of the New Testament, but the texts of the New Testament. And so they expected diversity in the text, even inconsistency in the handling of these materials, particularly the traditions and the Gospels about Jesus. Barton returns to this point, that it was not Marcion simply rejecting the Old Testament. He says of Marcion's view of the Old Testament on page 347, quote, it remained a true revelation, but a revelation from an evil deity, end quote. So Marcion, according to Barton, was really more of a traditionalist with respect to the Old Testament, while seeing the gospel books as, quote, convenient but corrigible records, end quote, page 347. Barton suggests that what Marcion was really not an innovator, but he was simply, practicing a handling of the New Testament writings that would have been common among other early Christians. So when he took his version of Luke and he edited it down, he was simply doing what all the evangelists did, the gospel writers did. What did? They collected traditions. And they left some things out and they included some things. So he was simply doing what Matthew did, what Mark did, what Luke did, what John did. And in fact, he appeals to, in particular, to the preface, the historical preface to the Gospel of Luke. Of course, Luke is the only gospel that has the so-called historical preface. Luke 1, verses 1 through 5, for as much as many have taken in hand to set forth in order a declaration of those things, which are most surely believed among us, even as they delivered them unto us, which from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word. It seemed good to me also, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, to write unto thee in order, most excellent Theophilus, that thou mightest know the certainty of those things wherein thou hast been instructed. So Barton's point is, look, Luke says, you know, other people have tried to write a life of Jesus and a gospel, and now I'm going to do it. I'm going to draw on sources, eyewitnesses, from ministers of the word, and I'm going to, you know, dedicate this to Theophilus, whoever that is, a lover of God, or simply a generic gospel to all Christians who are lovers of God. So he says, listen, that's exactly what Marcion was doing. He was doing nothing different than what Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were doing in their gospels. Here's a quote from him on page 348. He says, Marcion was in effect an evangelist. Not like Billy Graham, he's talking about, but like Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. An evangelist who, unfortunately for him, lived too late for this to be an acceptable profession. So if Marcion lived, you know, 100 years earlier, surely, his version of Luke might have been just as accepted as Matthew, Mark, Luke, canonical Luke, or John. So that's basically the first point of the four, Marcion's attitude towards the Bible. So let me offer a few responses to this. First of all, Barton's suggestion that Marcion's view of the Old Testament was little different than the Orthodox view of the Old Testament, I think, must be challenged. If Marcion held that the Old Testament came from an evil demiurge, rather than, as Orthodox Christians did, that it came from the one true God, Jehovah, of the Bible, and that the God of the Old Testament is the same as the God of the New Testament. If he believed that, again, the God of the Creator God was an evil God, that means that whatever communication he believed that came from this evil God in the Old Testament would hardly be considered something that was good, that was inspired, that was a revelation from a benevolent God. And so it seems to be missing the mark to say that Marcion's view of the Old Testament was the same as the Christian view of the Old Testament. Secondly, his suggestion that the early Christians saw the New Testament as not a revelation, not even a revelation on par with a revelation from an evil divinity, but that instead they saw it as riddled with errors, as corrigible, as simply a memory jogger, and not as scripture. I think that has to be challenged. When I read through this, I immediately thought of some of the places within the New Testament where the writers refer to the New Testament writings themselves as graphe, as the writings, as scripture. And there are two sort of go-to passages where we get this. And the first of these is in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 18, 1 Timothy 5:18. Paul writes, let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor. Oh, I'm reading verse 17. I'll just read that and then verse 18. Especially they who labor in the word and doctrine. In verse 18, for the scripture saith, thou shalt not muzzle the ox that treadeth out the corn, and the laborer is worthy of his reward. And as has been pointed out many times, in verse 18, there's a coupling of two citations. The first one is from the Old Testament, from the Torah, Deuteronomy 25:4. Don't muzzle the ox while it treads out the corn. But the second quotation, the laborer is worthy of his reward, the only place where this is found is in Luke chapter 10, verse 7, the Gospel of Luke. And so, but both of them have the heading in verse 18, for the scripture saith. So the author of 1 Timothy, which we believe to be Paul, which challenged, of course, by modern academics using the historical critical method, they reject the pastoral epistles as authentically Pauline. But we believe Paul wrote the epistles, 13 epistles attributed to him, and I believe even Hebrews is written by Paul. So he sees Deuteronomy and Luke both being scripture. And that goes against Barton's thesis here, that Marcion reflected some view that was held by early Christians who did not see the New Testament as on par with the Old Testament writings. The second passage is from 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 15 and 16, wherein Peter writes, "And account that the long-suffering of our Lord is salvation, even as our beloved brother Paul, also according to the wisdom given unto him, hath written unto you." Now, 2 Peter 3:16 is the important one. "As also in all his epistles, speaking in them of these things, in which are some things hard to be understood, which they that are unlearned and unstable wrest or twist, as they do also the other scriptures, unto their own destruction." So here's a place where the author of 2 Peter, I believe the Apostle Peter, the traditional view, he says Paul's letters, Paul's epistles are twisted by those who are unstable and unlearned, as they do the rest of the scriptures. And so he sees, he uses that technical term, the scriptures, that refer to inspired writings. And so these two examples, others could be called forth as well, challenge the whole idea that early Christians did not see the New Testament writings as scripture. And so for some reason, he would say, you know, they felt that they could change them, alter them, because they were just memory joggers and they were not meant to be fixed, stable, etc. The second of the four topics as to why Marcion is significant is Barton says Marcion is significant because of his rejection of allegory. He begins on page 348, this section, by saying, "Marcion refused to read the Old Testament allegorically." He returns to the Old Testament again, saying that Marcion saw it as the revelation of an evil deity, but he insisted on its literal meaning. Barton notes in particular that, quote, "Marcion anticipated the historical critical reading of, for example, Isaiah 7:14 as referring to the birth of Hezekiah." So whereas the early Christians, as in Matthew himself, sees Isaiah 7:14, the virgin shall conceive, he sees that as a reference to the virginal birth or the virginal conception of Christ himself from Mary, that Marcion took that same passage and he didn't interpret it spiritually or allegorically, but he interpreted it on a historical critical level as referring to the birth of King Hezekiah. Allegory, of course, was the method of early Christian interpreters, but Barton says Marcion refused to engage in fanciful allegorical interpretations. Barton adds that Marcion's, quote, "low reading," end quote, of the Old Testament was not an unknown position among early Christians. And Barton even cites Paul's statement in Romans 10:4 that Christ is the end of the law as a possible example of a supposed low reading of the Old Testament. He suggests, nevertheless, that this rejection of allegory was where the main originality in Marcion was to be found. So let me offer some responses to the ideas that Barton puts forward here. I think one could immediately challenge Barton by noting that early Christians, yes, they used allegorical or spiritual interpretations of the Old Testament, but they also affirmed literal and historical understandings of the Old Testament. So it wasn't an either or. And if Marcion rejected all spiritual interpretations of the Old Testament, he certainly would have been an outlier to the practice of Orthodox Christians. Christ himself, in places like John 6, verses 49 through 51, use spiritual interpretation of the manna being given in the wilderness. And he talks about himself as having been the bread now who's come down from heaven. That's an allegorical or spiritual or typological interpretation. And we can think of many places elsewhere in the New Testament, beyond the Gospels, beyond even the teachings of Christ. So one example would be in 1 Corinthians 10, verses 1 and 2, where Paul sees the Israelites passing through the Red Sea during the Exodus as a type for baptism. So Marcion's approach by rejecting the allegorical would clearly have been at odds with early Christian hermeneutics. So how would this make him conservative or traditional if he rejects all allegorical interpretations? Another point here I might add is it seems to be stretching it quite a bit for Barton to suggest that Paul, the Apostle Paul, advocated in any way, shape, or form a low understanding, a low reading of the Old Testament. The example he gave, Christ is the end of the law. Of course, end is telos. It doesn't mean that the law is no longer useful. Paul can say that the law is good. Or I think about what he said in Romans 15:4 when he says all the things were written aforetime were for our learning, that through the patience and the comfort of the scriptures we might have hope. Paul had a high view of the Old Testament, not a low view of the Old Testament. And so I didn't concur with the views that he put forward here. Let's look at the third of the four topics that Barton says are important for this revisited view of Marcion. And it is Marcion's what he calls bipartite New Testament. His point here is that Marcion's version of Luke, his gospel or euangelion, and his collection of Pauline letters, his apostolicon, reflect the idea of a twofold source of Christian teaching, as he puts it on page 352. So Marcion had his Luke and he had his Pauline epistles, and he says this was important. This was influential, wasn't the impetus or the catalyst for the forming of the New Testament canon, but it was important as a model for how Marcion and other early thinkers in the early Christian milieu went about articulating some form of the Christian religion, that they had the life of Jesus and then they had some authoritative interpretation, teachings about how to believe and practice the faith. And he gives an interesting example here where he suggests that the Gospel of Matthew and the Didache is an early Christian writing, some dated as early as the year 100. It has a lot of quotations from the Gospel of Matthew, from the Sermon on the Mount, has the Lord's Prayer. It's one of the earliest references to the doxology of the Lord's Prayer. And he says, we can see in Marcion's, Luke, and Pauline epistles, and in the coupling of Matthew, supposedly of Matthew and the Didache, an early Christian practice of having a gospel account and then having some authoritative reflection upon it or handbook about it. So just in response, a few thoughts. This seems very speculative to me. Did Marcion have really this bipartite New Testament, and does it reflect some early Christian practice, or did it influence some early Christian practice? If so, it would have been a deformity, because the New Testament canon wasn't just Gospels and letters, but it was also the Apocalypse, Revelation. It was the Book of Acts. And then just with the example of Matthew and the Didache, do we have evidence that Matthew and the Didache somehow circulated together? Okay, Matthew is quoted extensively in the Didache, but does that mean necessarily that they sort of intentionally circulated together as two sources for those who are practicing the Christian faith? In fact, early on, wasn't it very important Irenaeus of Lyon comes just after Marcion. And in his Against Heresies, he's talking about the fourfold gospel. With the early Christians, it really conceived that one gospel would be adequate, but didn't they very early on see the value of the fourfold gospel witness? And so there's a critique of this third point. Let's go on to the fourth point. And here he says Marcion is significant because of this early work called the Antitheses. Here Barton looks at the significance of this work, which Harnack has called a quasi-creedal work among Marcion's followers. Barton says that this work marks Marcion out as a highly original writer. And I'm not sure, I'm guessing that the Antitheses doesn't exist in an extant form. I've not ever read it. I'm assuming it's just drawn from quotations from those who were critical of Marcion, like Tertullian and others. But from this, Barton extrapolates and hypothesizes that there would have been what he calls a kit that would have been prepared for Marcion's followers. And that kit would have consisted of four parts. First of all, a gospel. His version, mutilated version of Luke. Secondly, a collection of apostolic letters. And thirdly, then, a doctrinal handbook. And that's what the Antitheses would have been. A doctrinal handbook that told you how to understand the gospel, how to understand Paul's writings, and also how to understand the Old Testament. And the fourth part of the kit would be the Old Testament. But again, the Old Testament not seen as the revelation of a good God, but the revelation of the demiurge. And so that would have been the fourfold kit that Marcion would have put forward. Then Barton goes on to compare this kit with others that were supposedly prepared by early Christian writers and thinkers, like Irenaeus. I mentioned Irenaeus, but he uses Irenaeus as an example. And he hypothesizes that Irenaeus would have put forward the fourfold gospel in his kit. Secondly, he would have put forward various apostolic epistles, primarily the canonical letters of the New Testament. Third, then, his equivalent to Marcion's Antitheses would be his work, the Demonstration of the Apostolic Preaching. And then last of all, the Old Testament, which would have seen not as the revelation of a demiurge, but as the revelation of the good God, Jehovah, the same God as revealed in the New Testament. And so he has this, I was going to say elaborate, it's actually very briefly put forward. These last couple of points are just done in a page and a half. Barton concludes from this comparison, quote, "At the formal level, therefore, Marcion was not an innovator, but a traditionalist. It was his doctrine that was novel, not the literary forms in which it was expressed." So let me offer some responses to this fourth topic or fourth point in Barton's list of reasons why Marcion is significant, even if he didn't spur the formation of the New Testament canon. Barton, again, with this idea of the fourfold kit, if I can put it that way, I think, again, seems to be way too hypothetical. It seems to be very speculative. It seems to be stretching things to the breaking point in an effort to try to say that Marcion was, at least in form, not much different than early Orthodox Christians. And we might ask, you know, even if there are some similarities in form, you know, Marcion had a mutilated gospel. Does that mean that because the Christians had canonical gospel accounts of the life of Christ that somehow Marcion was just the same as them? And then did such a kit ever really exist for Marcion? That seems very speculative. I don't think there's any explicit mention of that in the extant writings of Marcion or in those who wrote about him. And then did such a kit exist for early Christian writers like Irenaeus? Again, it seems to be, to me, to be quite speculative. This seems to be a bit like saying that Marcion wasn't much different from the early Orthodox writers, again, because they used written documents. Well, yeah, they use written documents, but it's the ideas within those documents, not the form in which they are placed, that is the important thing after all, isn't it? And so it seems to be, to me, to be misleading to suggest that Marcion could be called a traditionalist from an Orthodox perspective. What is it that drives modern critical scholars to want to rehabilitate Marcion? That's the question I leave with this. The last part of the chapter, Barton gives his conclusions just in about a half page or so. He begins, quote, page 354 in the text and canon book. He says, "My argument in this paper has been, in many respects, Marcion should be seen as a conservative rather than as an innovator." He repeats some of the contentions he made within the chapter. Marcion didn't really influence the formation of the New Testament canon. He didn't see the Gospels or the Epistles as sacred texts, but only as reliable documents and error-filled, corrigible. He wasn't compiling his own New Testament canon, but he was simply putting together some sources of authority, his kit. He concludes by saying that his major influence, Marcion's major influence, was twofold. First, his major influence was he rejected the Old Testament as reflecting an alien religion. And secondly, he taught that Jesus had come to save humankind from the evil creator of the Old Testament. In the last part of the chapter, he says on page 354, in short, Marcion was not a major influence on the formation of the New Testament. He was simply a Marcionite. And I think the idea is there is he was simply following the Marcionite stream of Christianity and not the Orthodox stream. Having covered the chapter or article, let me just offer some overall thoughts, critiques of this chapter. So we see in Barton's chapter some of the same new perspective on Marcion themes that I covered in my review of Knudsen and Wasserman in Word Magazine 176. And there seems to be this effort in late 20th century, early 21st century modern historical text criticism or modern historical New Testament criticism, biblical criticism, to rehabilitate Marcion. And I think this largely, again, and I made this point in Word Magazine 176, it reflects the influence of Walter Bauer's classic book, Orthodoxy and Heresy in Earliest Christianity, published in 1934, English edition 1971. People like Bart Ehrman picked this up and have been influenced by it. And it's simply the idea that Christianity shouldn't be understood just from the perspective of the winners, from the paleo-Orthodox, but it should be seen as a diverse faith, not early Christianity, singular, but early Christianities. And the Marcionite stream is just as important as the paleo-Orthodox stream. Now, I might agree with Barton that the so-called formation of the New Testament canon did not come about simply because of outside influences. The early Christians did not come to a consensus on the New Testament canon because they wanted to respond to Marcion or anyone else, any other false teachers. But we see the formation of the New Testament canon, really formation is the wrong word, it's recognition. And the early Christians didn't form the canon, they recognized the canon because, not because of external influences, Marcion or anyone else, because of the internal influences, the internal recognition of the inspiration of the scriptures. I think that Barton is wrong, and others who are trying to rehabilitate him to stress that he is some kind of conservative or traditionalist with respect to being a faithful traitor of some stream of Christianity. He rejected the Old Testament. He rejected most of the New Testament. And so I don't think we need to rehabilitate Marcion. Barton seems especially off base in his suggestion that early Christians did not see the New Testament as they did the Old Testament. I gave you the quotations from 1 Timothy 5:18, from 2 Peter 3:15 and 16. I don't know why. Certainly they do. They want to see the New Testament as something that was not stable, not fixed, but was flexible and corrigible. And I said, I don't know why. I do know why, because it undermines the authority of the New Testament. One final thought as I read through this, I really was struck by how it seemed to me that Barton was trying to present Marcion almost in the image of a contemporary modern historical critical scholar. He divorces the Old Testament from the New Testament. He rejects any allegorical or spiritual meaning for the Old Testament, but he only wants to interpret the New Testament based on historical analysis. I think his statement about Marcion having exactly the same view on Isaiah 7:14 as modern historical critical scholars is classic. I mean, funny thing is, Barton sees that as laudable. We see it, of course, as damnable. And he wants to see Marcion as someone who, you know, was out there rejecting allegory, wanting to have just a plain sense historical reading and seeing the problems with the New Testament writings, the errors within it, and reconstructing it and correcting it. He makes Marcion look like a modern academic text critic, basically, in the end. Someone who sees the New Testament as, again, error-laden, flexible, there's no fixed text, and the scholars need to come there and offer corrections. So he almost makes Marcion out to be the patron saint of modern text critics. When I read that, I was thinking about Albert Schweitzer, the great 19th century scholar. Of course, he was a liberal Protestant, but he did the great survey, the quest for the historical Jesus, cataloging the so-called first quest Jesus studies of that era, 19th century. And he has a classic line in one of his writings where Schweitzer says that the life of Jesus researchers who were attempting to reconstruct the life of Jesus, that in the end they were like men who looked down into a well and they only saw their own reflection. And I thought of that, that statement from, Schweitzer as I read this chapter from Barton, because the new Marcion, the revisited Marcion seems a lot like, in many ways, the modern, biblical scholar or the modern text critic. Well, this completes this Word Magazine. I hope that this information that we've covered is meaningful and edifying for you. You've learned some things. I had some new avenues for thinking open up to you. It's been good to be with you and to present this, and I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next Word Magazine. Till then, take care and God bless.